This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Alice Randall is very much at home in the city where she lives, Nashville, Tennessee. A writer in residence at Vanderbilt University, she has put her pen to hit country songs. She's done food advocacy centered on the cuisine of the Black American diaspora and has written a widely read novel set in the universe of Gone with the Wind. Looking at her CV, you might mistake her for a lifetime Southerner. But in her latest novel, Black Bottom Saints, Alice Randall lays out a feast in cinematic detail from the home of her childhood, Detroit, in the late 1960s, a Black Camelot that formed so many cornerstones of America's economic, intellectual, and artistic life. The novel is structured as a book of saints in the Catholic tradition, peopled with a range of characters that lift Black Bottom's history off the page and give voice to a place that continues to influence Detroit and the world to this day. Alice Randall, thanks for joining us. Welcome to Stateside.
April, it's wonderful to be with you.
You drop us into the story in 1967, a year when I think you yourself would have been a small kid in Detroit, right?
About 8 years old.
So our narrator, our tour guide through Black Bottom is Ziggy Johnson. He's a gossip columnist for the Black newspaper, the Michigan Chronicle, syndicated in two other cities. Alice Randall, that one detail is so loving, a gossip columnist for a Black newspaper, to think that all of those details of Black life, although small in terms of what people might consider the news events of the day, would be subject of interest and of publication. Could you tell us a little bit about the sensibility that you wanted to write with for Ziggy, who was a real person?
Well, one, Ziggy always privileged Black art aesthetics. He was a gossip columnist and an entertainment columnist, so he was steeped in Black music, Black dance, a variety of Black performances. And he was also steeped in Black language, the barbershop language of the street and the show world language. But I must note that Ziggy's language was my first language. I was born in Detroit in 1959, and the first writer I ever knew, though I, like you, would study at Harvard, but the first writer I ever knew was Ziggy Johnson. I started attending his dance school when I was 3 years old. But before I ever walked into his dance school, my father did not read to me from children's books. He read to me from newspapers. Monday through Friday, it would be the Detroit Free Press and the news. But on the weekends, it was the Michigan Chronicle. And my favorite storyteller was Ziggy.
You paint a picture of his life as an impresario at the Driftwood Lounge, booking top names in the Detroit music scene, which I guess I'm saying the top names in America at the time. And you also have him talking about the children that he taught dance to at his school, what he calls the breadwinner's children. And there's just a short passage that describes who he's talking about. Could you share that with us?
Yes, I'd love to do that. The word that explains Detroit to me, breadwinner, the partying factory people, were those whom I first noticed when I arrived in the late 30s. Large numbers of Black men who earned a good, steady wage doing a skilled job, then returned to the homes they owned, ready to refuel, get dressed to the nines to head out to hear fabulous music and drink good liquor. I was the breadwinner's MC of choice and producer of choice, and proud to be so. The factory folk, the breadwinners, drove the Black city. Detroit knew this. Black Detroit knew this. We gave the factory folk who worked in the automobile plants their proper respect. We loved those men who did the shift work that meant 8 out of 10 Black families in Detroit owned the home they lived in and could afford to go out to a club to hear live music any night they chose. Our breadwinners built this city. We remember when River Rouge ran 24/7, 3 shifts a day at the plant, that the show bars had 2 shows on Sunday and late shows every night, sometimes at 2 a.m. for those who got off the late shift. That was the opportunity that created Caramel Camelot.
So this world that Ziggy Johnson lives in, this is the world of the Black Bottom Saints, and he counts among them not just famous people, but also sort of everyday folks, people like a bartender named Thomas Hayden, his own mother, who was a faithful Catholic. And there were certainly folks in his reckoning like Joe Louis, Della Reese, Billy Eckstein, and the poet Robert Hayden, and you bring them all to life. Dinah Washington and her husband, the Detroit Lions' great Night Train Lane. How did you go about selecting who Ziggy would want people to know about?
Well, there are three criteria to becoming a Black Bottom Saint. You have to know that I was working with, I had found about 1,000 of his columns published over 2 decades. So there were three criteria. They were, one, that they had likely been mentioned in one of Ziggy's columns, or lots of times in Ziggy's columns. Two, Ziggy had told me or the children in his dancing school about the person. And three, they had likely walked through the lobby of the Gotham Hotel where Ziggy lived for over a decade, and which was in old Black Detroit. So, but four, actually, they knew something significant about trauma, moving from trauma to transcendence. Because when Ziggy talked to the students in his school about his Black Bottom Saints, he was telling us the stories that would help us move from trauma to transcendence. So he was telling us the story of Black wisdom.
Right. I think some of my favorites of the saints are the people who are just sort of semi-famous. The charm school founder, Cordy Stewart, who is this really fierce mix of control and ambition with a lot of fizz. And Ada Smith, who was a celebrated singer and dancer who rubbed shoulders with James Baldwin in Paris. I don't know how you managed to choose.
I love Shirley MacNeil. Now, she is going to be a Black woman, high school English teacher, but she's also going to be the person who brings transcendental meditation to the United States. That's one of the things that lets me think of myself as a blues novelist. I mean, the blues argues that no life needs to be relegated to the margins. And Ziggy, steeped in his mother's Mississippi blues background, though born in Chicago, he thought everybody was important. Long before people were talking Black Lives Matter, he was living it. And so there's space for a heroin dealer, Scatterbrain Stevens, in Ziggy's pantheon of saints, because Ziggy doesn't define people by the worst day in their life.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Alice Randall. She's the author of the new novel, Black Bottom Saints. Alice, could you talk to us about the ways that Detroit has been with you in all the places that you have gone in your life?
Absolutely. What a wonderful observation. I was born in Detroit, and I think that the chin-up swagger and the pride in just being able to outwork anybody else. But the Detroit version of that doesn't turn into John Hendry syndrome, because Detroit also privileges Black creativity and art, and not just songwriting and performing art. The Gotham Hotel was also supporting Black photographers and hosted the Shutterbug Club. So one of the things that I feel that I've had from my earliest days is a sense of art and industry that is just pure Detroit. And Detroit, even before Motown, it found one of its great flowers in Motown. But long before the Driftwood Lounge, there's going to be the Flame Show Bar. There are going to be so many clubs in Detroit. We're going to have Memphis Minnie migrating up to Detroit because it's such a great place to live. Laverne Baker, who you probably don't know, but is the second woman, not Black woman, second woman to go in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And she lives in Detroit. But who's the first woman? Aretha Franklin. She lives there too. So when I was born into Detroit in 1959, I was being born into one of the great art communities that has ever been collected in the world. We all know about Paris in the 20s, but Paris in the 20s pales compared to Detroit in the 40s.
There's a thread that runs through your prose writing that has to do with the people who get left out of history. It was certainly true of your debut novel, The Wind Done Gone, that imagines this Black woman in the universe of Gone with the Wind. Her half-sister is Scarlett O'Hara. They know a lot of the same people, although Sayonara, this protagonist, walks a very different path. And we see so many people speaking to us out of the pages of history through the Black Bottom Saints. Do you feel like there are benefits and limitations to how we use fiction as a tool to fill in our historic gaps?
I think for the Black experience, that using fiction to paint some of the broad strokes and some of the nuanced strokes of the inner life of African Americans from earlier periods is essential. Because so many of my ancestors were not able to leave written reports because they could not read and write in English, that if we don't take our oral histories, if we don't privilege our oral histories and translate them into fiction, we lose them. Because there are oral histories, because there isn't documentation, I think that there's an integrity in calling it fiction. But it is a fiction that often comes closer to the truth than the actual published record because of all the things the public's record, the official accounting, cannot measure. For example, the people right now who are afraid to fill out census data because they are afraid that it could be misused by immigration officials. The published record doesn't always well and truthfully document underprivileged people.
We're in this era right now where all manner of American history is being re-examined in the same way that you have torn down some of the tropes of American history in some of your books. What do you see coming out of this time?
This is a time of reckoning. And in the time of reckoning, I think that we gain greater and greater illumination. With Black Bottom Saints, I think that one of the things that we are being called upon to celebrate is cultural wisdom that in the Black experience. For example, we have gone through just recently the Me Too movement, which I think is so important. But one of the things that was under-discussed that is we shine a light on in Black Bottom Saints is that Black women have been being raped in America since the first slave trade boats arrived and the first Black women arrived on plantations in America. And Black women and men and children have built some cultural currency and insight in how to transcend that extraordinary trauma, not to minimize it, not to minimize that crime. We call out that crime. But we also call in the genius that the children born from those rapes, some of them created triumphant lives. And some of them know that joy is radical. Mm-hmm. And so to me, call in the Black experience, we celebrate that everyday miracle. And it reframes something significant. And I feel right now, the entire world, Black culture in America knows very a lot about rising from the ashes. The entire world needs to rise from the ashes of a global pandemic. And there is no better group of people to spot to when trying to rise from the ashes than to contemplate the Black citizens of Detroit who lived there from 48 to 68.
There's a beautiful epigraph at the start of the book that discusses that. You know, in recent years, I've heard American history described alternately as a continuum on which progress moves forward and sometimes rolls back. And sometimes I've heard it described as more of a pendulum, where progress really isn't an adaptable concept. Ta-Nehisi Coates has written a little bit about this. And I wondered which read on American history rings more true to you.
I centered in my feminine interior experience. I consider myself to be a feminist. And I think that progress is not about external events. Some of it is about internal reality, because that is the one thing we can control. So I think about individual progress independent of the external political reality. But I also think that we must always think about structural obstacles to individuals achieving their interior peace and their interior happiness. The novel is divided into four sections, which are summer, fall, winter, and spring. The saints of summer are the saints of the roots of the Black experience. The saints of fall are the saints that point out that structural obstacles can be so great that an individual cannot achieve the movement from trauma to transcendence. If you are a four-year-old girl shot dead in your own house, as Tanya Blanding was in the summer of 1967, you don't get to move from trauma to transcendence, no matter how artful you are in your interior. But the saints of winter remind us that there's geniuses of Black grit, geniuses of Black movement from trauma to transcendence. But the saints of spring are my favorite. They are some of the people who have the hardest lives, who despite all, despite, actually arrive at joy. So to me, that's the paradox, that progress is an ideal. It's not a reality.
Alice Randall's new novel is Black Bottom Saints. Alice, we didn't even get a chance to ask you about the many, many cultural moments that you drew from on this, both for the words and for an amazing list of cocktails that you concocted for each and every one of the saints so that libations can be part of their celebration. But the whole thing's a feast. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. I wanted to make a five sense address to joy: the taste, the touch, the scent, the sound, the sight of joy. And adding all the cocktails allowed me to do that, even in a novel that looks at public and private trauma. We get to rest on joy with the cocktails. For the theater dance, you call the black bottle. I want to learn that dance. Oh, to see the dash, you call your big black bottle.